Hey, everybody, Flora here. Listener Ellen left a voicemail on the Every Little Thing helpline because she found a coded message in an article of clothing.
Well, it was salmon colored, and it was just like a pullover, like scoop neck, just kind of almost like a tee, but like a nicer version, a fancy tee.
I live in the world of fancy tees. That's the only fancy I do. Is tea fancy?
Yeah. And I was trying to figure out how to clean this piece of clothing and looked on the tag. I mean, the tag was like 6 inches long, it seemed like, and there were no words, just had a bunch of symbols. A square with a circle in it, the little dot in the very center, had a triangle with some lines in it, and then a circle with an X through it.
The eternal mystery of the laundry care tag.
And I was like, this is ridiculous. Just like, how could anyone know what this is supposed to mean?
What is Ellen's salmon-colored fancy tee trying to tell her? We knew just where to go for answers.
The symbols are a language that can help us understand our past. As the saying goes, a picture says 1,000 words.
Are you familiar with The Da Vinci Code by Dan Brown?
Yes, I enjoyed the book.
Ellen, if you could consult any character from The Da Vinci Code to help with this problem, who would you choose?
Oh, well, Tom Hanks, he could help us, right? But I don't remember the name of the character. It's been a little while since I've read the book.
The character's name was Robert Langdon.
Okay, coming back.
And Robert Langdon was inspired by a real person Dan Brown knew.
I'm John Langdon. I am a person who designs symbols, and I guess that was somehow connected in Dan's mind.
John has been working in symbols for over 40 years.
Did he make up the symbols for the laundry?
No, but he did give us his professional symbologist's opinion about them.
Hey, Ellen, you and I are of a single mind on this. These symbols are virtually meaningless and mostly laughable, I think.
What's the problem with them?
Like, how is a person supposed to know that one line underneath a wash bucket means machine wash permanent press?
John had a bottomless wash tub of critiques.
I'm just looking at dry in the shade. Absolutely, totally meaningless.
Shade on shade.
The dots inside the wash tub representing different temperatures seems crazy to me. I mean, I would use a thermometer to represent heat.
The problem for me is, like, it feels like no matter how long I look at these symbols, I could never get to the solution.
Right. I agree.
Oh, absolutely. We've identified a real problem. The average person doing the laundry in their home, in order to know what all these means, would have to have studied them.
How did we get to a place where we needed a legend to wash our clothes? Okay, so governments require that clothes have care labels. The instructions can be written out in words, but the problem is if you're selling that fancy tee in a lot of different countries, how do you fit all of those languages on a tag?
True. Something written in German would be like 3 times the length in English.
And washing clothes has gotten complicated. There can be a lot of instructions. But where do those instructions come from? Ellen, we went on an expedition to find out. So will you describe what this room looks like?
It looks like a fancy version of your local laundromat.
It's nicer than my laundromat.
Well, in New York.
It's a low bar.
Right, it's a low bar.
There are entire labs, textile testing labs, that determine how you should launder your fancy tee. Brands will come to these labs and say, here's what we think the care instruction should be. Can you test it out?
We are there to confirm that it's an acceptable care label for that garment.
That's Patrick Ayers. He's the VP of operations at one of these labs in Manhattan. It's called VAR Test. Imagine an old office space like wood floors that has been converted into a multi-purpose lab. I'm looking at the wall, and it looks like kind of like a CSI crime board, but a fiber identification.
Well, that's our world. I mean, we do a lot of analysis. Those are longitudinal analysis.
When you talk to the people in this lab, clothes are not discussed as clothes. They're talked about as technology.
Whether it be wicking properties, whether it be waterproof breathable fabrics, these are all very specific technologies that are built in that have to be cared for properly if they're going to, you know, have a long life.
Vartest has all of these specialized and bizarre machines, like a seam strength tester.
So we actually drop 5 pounds onto a seam 5,000 times to see if the seam starts to rupture.
This is like a New York nightmare for the people below you. To check whether the fabric dye will bleed, Vartest uses this special washing contraption called the laundrometer, which does not look like a washing machine.
Yeah, it's different. Most of the laundering happens inside the stainless steel cans.
The laundrometer is a metal box with a rack inside that holds small cans. And inside the cans, you put detergent, water, scraps of colored fabric, along with white fabric. The machine shakes the cans, and then you can see if the fabric bleeds. Did you say that you put stainless steel balls inside, too?
So, yes, that's simulating a more aggressive wash.
Also, that dry clean only care instruction, here's why you need a test for that.
It's a lot of very fancy, very decorative garments, particularly with beads on them, that people will go, oh, there's no way we can launder it. We'll just say dry clean only. Well, when we dry clean them, what you can find is the beads will just dissolve.
It literally dissolves.
It literally dissolves. It's gone forever.
This is somebody's job. That's amazing.
Yes. And I asked Patrick what he thought of the symbols.
Generally speaking, there's less people that understand what the symbols mean. So it'd be great to have more education in that area.
That's what we're doing. Which brings us to your original question, Ellen, about the symbols.
Yes, who made these up?
And why are they so inscrutable? We went to the source.
Genetics was created in 1963, which is 55 years ago. They first started with 4 symbols.
That's Pascal Florent, the general secretary of the French nonprofit Genetics. Genetics created the DeLaundry Code.
Our goal is really to harmonize and standardize this language of symbols to make sure that a brand from Japan, for example, or a brand from France can be understandable on care instructions the same way by anyone worldwide.
That would be very helpful. Very helpful if they could actually achieve the goal. But I don't know if mission was accomplished because I still don't know what the symbols mean.
Now is the moment. Get out your bleach pen. We are about to give you the keys to the laundry symbol castle. Ellen, are you ready to know what your fancy tea has been trying to tell you?
I'm ready.
Okay. There are dozens of symbols, and there are some differences among countries, but most of the symbols are variations on a set of 5 basic images.
You have the washing symbol. That's the first one.
Which is a wash tub. It looks like a bucket with little waves on top. And sometimes you'll see a number in it, like 30.
Yes. Is the 30 mean Celsius?
Yes.
Good. See, that's because I teach science, so I know about those Celsius things.
Number 2 is more perplexing. It's the triangle, which stands for bleach.
Triangle doesn't make any sense to me, so I don't know about that.
Here's a way you could remember it. Pascal told us that the triangle was inspired by the triangle caution sign. Okay, the 3rd symbol is the square.
Maybe it's a detergent box.
The square is the drying symbol.
It's a dryer.
And then you have the ironing.
The iron symbol looks like an iron. It means ironing. It all kind of makes sense. Finally, you have the circle. Any guesses?
Don't. It's like a railroad crossing. It means absolutely nothing. I don't know. I got no guess.
The last one is the professional cleaning symbols.
The circle means take it to a professional. And apparently it was inspired by the circular drum engine of early dry cleaners, which is logical, but does not mean anything unless you were a dry cleaner in the 1960s. And in fact, the data backs this up. Genetex did a survey of symbol comprehension, and it wasn't good.
33% will know the bleaching one, 32% the drying one, and only 21% the professional symbol.
Most people don't understand 3 out of 5 symbols.
There's some margin for improvement there. Being a teacher, if all of my class was only scoring that well on their tests, they would have me in there giving me a talking to.
Well, it's this is a good point. Consumer may not know well the meaning of all the symbols. We are trying every day to promote that symbols.
But why not just make more intuitive symbols?
What would you put as a as a professional cleaner?
Well, I'm not a graphic designer. However, I am familiar with the hanger with the plastic bag over it. That feels very dry cleanery to me. I could spitball with you if you want, Pascal, but I just like a bleach jug might be more universal than a triangle.
Yeah. No, it's not our objective to change any of these symbols because brands are using it. Consumer, they see them. It's just a question of now telling them the story behind the symbols.
No.
I know, they're not changing anytime soon, it sounds like.
And the intentions seem to be very good. But you know what they say about good intentions? The road to hell.
We asked John Langdon, in a perfect world, what would laundry symbols look like?
You know, the expression of trying to get 6 pounds of something into a 4-pound can. The complexities of laundry are such that we're trying to get way more information into these symbols than the symbol will sustain.
So what's the solution?
Buy all cotton clothes and just throw everything in the wash together. Can you tell my laundry is mostly t-shirts?
Ellen, next time you see that tag in your fancy tea, are you going to think about the symbols differently?
Yes.
Yeah?
I think that it's symbolic of, you know, the things that we do that don't work, but we just keep on doing them.
This is getting deep.
Seriously.
It's kind of existential. Really pulling a lot of meaning out of these symbols.
Well, you got to find it wherever you can find it.
We'll put the legend to the DeLaundry Code on Facebook and Twitter. After the break, 4 great facts to get you through your next awkward social function, starting with Criminal Minds.
Koala edition.
Hey, so I am here with producer Aaron Reese.
Hi, Flora.
And we are going to give you an update on our Fact Buddy exchange. So as a reminder, we asked you to send us your best facts on a postcard. And anyone who sent us a fact will get a fact postcard from us in return. So Aaron, you are master of the postcards. How many have we gotten?
I am the postmaster. We've gotten over 100 postcards with fascinating facts from actually all over the world.
And what are we doing today?
Today, we're going to be sharing some of the most you've got to be kidding me facts that we received. We're calling the listeners, so you'll hear straight from the fact buddies who sent them.
Who's first?
First up, we have Josh, who sent us a suspicious koala fact.
Dropping some hot facts.
Hot facts.
Hello?
Hey, is this Josh?
Yes.
All right, hit us.
So my fact is that koalas have fingerprints that are virtually indistinguishable from human fingerprints.
What?
My understanding is even forensic detectives would have a very hard time telling koala fingerprints and human fingerprints apart. There may be like a a koala Sherlock Holmes that can tell the difference.
How could that be? That makes no sense.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think of koalas and humans as being very similar to each other otherwise.
In any way. I have to now I want to look at koala hands. Koala fingers. Are you by a computer? Because I really want to send you this hand.
Give me 1 second here.
Okay, I'm looking at the picture. They have the same number of fingers as us, but they're organized with 2 thumbs. They have 2 thumbs.
That is kind of a crazy hand.
Right?
Yeah, they look a little bit like mutated gorilla paws.
Yes. Mm-hmm. With human fingerprints.
With human fingerprints and a very soft fur.
Do you remember where you learned this fact?
So I actually lived in Australia for a semester in college, and I think I heard it there.
I was assuming that maybe you did like koala CSI or something and you were calling from personal experience.
It does occur to me that there are all these unsolved crimes that may have been committed by koalas.
That people are looking for human fingerprints, but we need a koala database.
Exactly. And you know, Australia was founded by convicts, so it seems, I don't know, there seems some kind of relationship there.
Are you trying to say that the koalas are like a historical scapegoat for all of the crimes committed in Australia?
Well, you said it, not me.
Hello?
Is this Angela?
Yeah. I can't tell you how excited I am to talk about this. Man, I bet you guys have gotten some juicy stuff.
Well, in terms of juiciness, your fact was right there at the top.
Literally.
What is your wow fact?
My wow fact is that American lobsters actually pee out of their faces.
American lobsters actually pee out of their faces.
Where does the pee come out from?
They release their urine out from nephropores that are located just beneath the base of their front antennae. They also release pheromones as a form of communication.
So they actually are communicating through their pee.
They are communicating through their pee.
Okay, so I'm looking at a drawing of a lobster's anatomy, and just the complicated nature of the face, I should have known that like a real good fact was lurking.
In the crevices.
Somewhere in there.
When did you learn this fact?
So, even though I live in Maine, I only grew up eating lobster once a year, and it was a really big to-do in my family. And I believe it was an uncle who said, you know, lobsters pee out of their faces, don't you, hon? And I was probably like, what?
Hey, this is Greg.
Hey, Greg. What's your fact?
John Philip Sousa, who is best known as the American March King, also happened to be a world-class trap shooter and is regarded as one of the all-time great trap shooters.
Trap shooters like throwing a clay pigeon and shooting it out of the sky with a shotgun.
Pretty much, yeah.
Are you a trap shooter?
I'm not.
Are you a marcher?
Well, I was in band in high school and junior high, and I did play the tuba. And so I did actually play a sousaphone on occasion.
What is John Philip Sousa's greatest hit?
The Stars and Stripes Forever is probably his biggie. I think it's like the national march of the United States. It's like the, you know, the standard.
How does it go?
Let's see. I'll hum it. It goes like, da 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 da.
So have you gotten to unleash this fact, John Philip Sousa's trap shooting interest?
I think I tried deploying it once. I have a vague recollection. I don't even really remember the context. And I remember it kind of landing with a bit of a thud.
Hello?
Hi, is this Olivia?
Yes.
I have to say that your fact has probably some of the most curious combinations of topics that I think I've come across so far in reading through these.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah. Well, first of all, what is your fact?
It's about Hugh Hefner, the celebrity owner of Playboy magazine, I guess, founder. And it's that he has the largest scrapbook collection in the world while he was alive.
Okay, I'm looking this up. He is in the Guinness Book of World Records for the largest personal scrapbook collection. I would also like to point out that this fact arrived to us on a postcard that's about the wizarding world of Harry Potter.
Okay, so I actually work at the Universal Orlando Resort. So I like buying postcards from the Harry Potter area and like sending them to my friends.
Why this fact, Olivia?
So I'm really interested in historical figures that like draw a lot of different opinions. And, you know, people have like really strong feelings about Hugh Hefner. So when I find these like polarizing figures, I just Google a lot about them and I try to figure out like what their mindset is. I don't think of like the Playboy brand and like players in general being like artsy, crafty types.
Everybody's got a secret side to them.
Yeah, it's crazy to wrap my mind around.
I guess I imagine him like finishing up some sort of like lavish, you know, extravagant party at the Playboy Mansion and then, you know, stubbing out his cigar, spreading out a bunch of like crinkle cut scissors and crepe paper and interesting stickers.
I wonder if like earlier in his life, if he would like end his orgies by being like, all right, thank you, ladies. Now I have to work on my craft.
Yeah, like let's get down to business.
To sum up, here are our featured facts for your small talk needs. Koalas have human-like fingerprints.
Lobsters pee out of their faces, hon.
John Philip Sousa was a big gun in trap shooting. And
Hugh Hefner had a world record holding personal scrapbook collection.
Thank you to everybody who sent us facts. We will do another round of fact exchange in the future. So if you come across a good fact, hold on to it, put it in your pocket for the next Fact Buddy exchange. And we'll post some pictures of these postcards on Twitter and Facebook. If you have a question you want us to look into, give us a ring. The ELT helpline is open, 833-RING-ELT, 833-RING-ELT. Also, we're working on a story about dogs, and we want to hear from you. Has your dog ever communicated something really important to you? Have you had a Timmy is in the well moment with your dog? Call us and tell us about it, 833-RING-ELT.
Every Little Thing is produced by Phoebe Flanagan, Aaron Reese, Bradley Campbell, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Nicole Pasulka, Amelia Schonbeck, and Doug Barron. Our consulting editors are Ian Chillog and Caitlin Kenny. Dara Hirsch scored and mixed this episode. Thanks also to listeners Chad, Catherine, Rachel, Amber, Ivy, and Leah for talking with us about their facts. I also have human fingerprints. Goodbye.